suggested that the invitation was here to really notice what's going on, you know, notice what's happening in this moment, or maybe that was that moment. So I was just curious, what did you notice?
The birds.
Uh-huh. So sound. Sound.
The music from the church.
Many sounds going on. Yes.
The cars.
Mm-hmm.
Throbbing.
Throbbing. So sensations in the body.
Yeah. But actually, it brought me more aware. Fuller breath.
You noticed the throbbing and then the breath felt fuller?
No, your words brought me back to
Oh.
I mean, it throbbed, but then
uh-huh.
Yeah, it just brought me back to my breath more than the throbbing. So thank you.
Sure.
Just a deep breath.
I noticed a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
So like the breath maybe was shallow, but then somehow there was
a
change.
One deep breath.
Oh. Yeah, interesting.
For a little while, I really appreciated just, it's so nice to just sit quietly and breathe and not
uh-huh.
doing anything.
For a little while, you appreciated that.
Yeah. Went out somewhere else.
What form did that noticing take? Was it like a sort of a sense of there were other people or a particular?
Their awareness.
Oh, what kind of an awareness? Oh, that's interesting. Thank you. Anyway, I just thought I'd follow up. I was curious, actually. I was really curious.
Maybe it was something I shouldn't have done. The quietness brought a very pleasant memory of playing with frogs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, there's, yeah. So memory can be happening on this moment. Yeah. Yeah, so it's all included. Yeah.
What did you notice?
if I remember. Breath, and a little sort of some sensations from the shoulders, some amount of planning going on in the mind. And I noticed sort of judgments about the music coming and going. Actually, that fit into the planning. Like, I was wondering, should I call Albors and ask them to turn it down? Or is it okay? Well, maybe it is okay. And then just breath, you know. And noticing the way that sort of, that kind of came and went. Like, sometimes I wasn't noticing the music, and sometimes I was noticing the music, and sometimes I was noticing it and having a judgment, and sometimes I was just noticing it. Or sometimes there's probably just a judgment and no awareness of music anyway. Just judgment.
But can't you, if you hear it, can't you adjust it to being part of the atmosphere that you can use to the positive?
Hmm. Yeah.
Such as I had an MRI a couple weeks ago, and I've always hated them because it's a pound.
Yeah.
And yet I asked to listen to Tibetan meditation music, and I started thinking the pound, pound, pound was pounding health into me.
Right.
It was the first time I liked
yeah.
MRI.
That's a wonderful example of the way the mind kind of creates something, right? The pounding is unpleasant, now the pounding is helpful.
And
same pounding, right?
Into the
hmm. Yeah.
I suppose it can't always be done.
Mm-hmm. So a couple of weeks ago, thank you for sharing that. So a couple of weeks ago, I was in Massachusetts. the bulk of why I was there was to be at a training for teachers of mindfulness-based stress reduction, kind of a medical secular way of bringing Dharma into the world, really, started in a hospital. So I don't want to talk about that so much, but at the end of that, I actually gave myself like a layover day afterwards. Instead of hopping on the red eye and going straight home, I gave myself an extra day. And an extra day I was going to go and visit two Zen friends in Worcester, about a half an hour away from where the training was. The whole training was in a hotel, actually, so I was in a hotel for 8 days, and I got out of the hotel. And so I called up my Zen friends in Worcester, who I don't know really well. I visited with them one other time, and they're a couple who run the Zen Center there. They bought a large house, which is the Boundless Way Zen Temple, and they live there, and you know, all the practice happens there. It's a neat place. So anyway, I was calling them as I was leaving the conference hotel, trying to figure out the logistics. I didn't have a car. And so we kind of figured that out. And then while I was on the phone with them, they said, well, would you give the Dharma talk when you get here? And I said, okay. So I thought I was just getting directions, but I got an assignment to give the Dharma talk. And then when I got there, I asked a little more what that meant. And it turns out they have a little bit different style. And that's part of what's fun about visiting different Zen places or all kinds of spiritual places, is the style is always a little different, you know, and so much. It's so interesting, and you can notice your opinions about that and what seems, you know, you kind of analyze it and you experience it in different ways. And their style of giving a Dharma talk is like 10 to 15 minutes is the whole talk. And that's not the style that I grew up on from our guiding teacher, Norman Fisher, who often give Dharma talks for 40 or 50 minutes or even longer. So I thought, huh, I don't know if I really know how to give a 10 or 15 minute Dharma talk. So I asked them how to do it, and they made a few suggestions. And I knew that they were a koan study sangha, where many of the students privately work in their meditation on a Zen story, on a koan, and that the gist of then going to the private interview, like we had private interviews tonight, in that system, the gist of the private interview, it revolves around the story, revolves around the koan. It's not exactly like trying to come up with an answer. That's a bit of a misunderstanding from the popular press, but it's the koan story is the sort of central piece of their practice, and so they bring it up in a certain way. Whereas our meetings are much more open-ended, not so structured. And so since I knew there were a koan study group, I thought, well, I'll better talk on a koan. And so I thought I'd talk about my favorite koan, which I don't know, maybe if you talked about this in the study group here, John. So I thought I would bring up for them the koan Jiaozhou's Donkey's Cross, Horse's Cross, or you could also call it Jiaozhou's Bridge. Did you talk about that in the group? Okay, good. Yes. So I thought, since I didn't know if anyone tonight was signed up to give the student talks, this is a time slot anyway, you could give a short talk about something. I thought I'd just throw my talk from the Worcester Zen community into my bag, so here it is. Although it'll be different, because the other part of their style is they don't prepare notes. They think about it, but they don't prepare notes. So I kind of weaseled on that. I had a little bit of notes. Whereas oftentimes my talks, I'll prepare more or less everything I'm going to say. So I thought I'd share with you tonight's version of that semi-prepared short talk. Because this is a really interesting story, really germane to the way the mind goes, the way our life goes. It's one of 100 stories that are collected in a collection called the Blue Cliff Record from China about the 10th century. Here's the story. Here's the koan. A monk asked Jiaozhou, "For a long time I've heard of the stone bridge of Jiaozhou. But now that I've come here, I just see a simple log bridge." Jiaozhou said, "You just see the log bridge. You don't see the stone bridge." The monk said, "What is the stone bridge?" Jiaozhou said, "It lets donkeys cross. It lets horses cross." That's the whole story. I'll read it again and then I'll explain a few things. But just to take it in without a lot of explanation at first is the style, just to kind of absorb the words and see what the feeling is. A monk asked Jiaozhou, "For a long time I've heard of the stone bridge of Jiaozhou. But now that I come here, I just see a simple log bridge." Jiaozhou said, "You just see the log bridge? You don't see the stone bridge." The monk said, "What is the stone bridge?" Jiaozhou said, "It lets donkeys cross. It lets horses cross." So there's a lot of play on names in this story, which is common in Chinese literature. And especially the Chinese Zen masters had multiple names, so it can be a little bit confusing. But often what they would do once they were the abbot of a temple, once they were settled and teaching somewhere, is they would take the name of that place, which might be the name of the temple or might be the name of the nearby mountain. That part of the Zen iconography or mythology is that practice happens in the mountains. Well, sometimes these famous mountain temples are actually like kind of like a hill or just like flat, you know, but it's still a mountain. And so Jiaozhou is the name of a mountain, and it's the name of a Zen teacher. The Zen teacher took the name of the mountain of the place. And in the town below the mountain, you know, the town below the mountain, you got to have a town below the mountain, and then you have the temple on the mountain, there is a bridge. There's a really well-built stone bridge. And this bridge, which was completed in the year 605, is still standing now and in daily use. So that's an interesting thing right away. Like, we're talking about a bridge that even when this story was collected was 200 or 300 years old. And we don't have any few human-made things here more than a couple of years old, not many. No bridges. And still standing, and you can see a picture of it in Wikipedia. You can actually see a picture of the stone bridge of Jiaozhou. In the Wikipedia article, it exclaims with great enthusiasm that this bridge is the world's oldest open spandrel stone segmental arch bridge. So if you're looking for an old open spandrel stone segmental arch bridge, that's where to go. And so the story, as most of these stories are, is a story of encounter, usually framed with a monk and a teacher, a student and a teacher. But of course, encounter works on every level, right? Like we're encountering this moment. We're encountering ourselves. In a way, there's nothing but encountering things. Like, is there anything real? It's hard to know, but there's encounter. And so a monk has arrived at the temple, is the implication here. Arrived for the first time at the temple, and quite possibly traveled a long distance, and probably on foot. And so these stories, in a way, are like little like peaks that just sort of poke out of a vast practice history. And part of that practice history involved a lot of walking, actually. I always think about that when I read these stories, like, you know, we focus on the story, but in the background is that this monk just was practicing and walking and practicing and walking, going from place to place for, who knows, weeks, month, you know, longer? I don't know. Who knows how many miles he just walked or she just walked. And the teachers of the day had reputations. And so you would go on a journey to the next temple to study, you're always looking for your perfect teacher, right? So they did suffer from the same materialism that we suffer from in a certain way, you know. You want to have the best one, right? You want to have the best teacher. And so the implication is that the monk had heard that this teacher, Jiaozhou, was a really great, impressive Zen teacher. And he'd come in this big journey. And he gets there, and it turns out the temple is really small. There's not that many students. Maybe you were unimpressed tonight with how few students there are. And a little bit run down. Apparently Jiaozhou hated to fundraise. He didn't like to have too much money. And there are many stories about his sort of simple way of practicing. One is that he had like a ceremonial chair. We have a ceremonial chair now. I don't know where it came from, but we have a ceremonial chair.
Oh, it's Connie's.
Is it Connie's? Oh, okay. We ceremonialized it the other day. Anyway, he said that one of the legs on his ceremonial chair broke. And one of the students offered to take it into town, you know, to the woodworker or something and repair it. And Joe just said, no. And he grabbed like a half-burnt stick out of like the fireplace and lashed it on there to make the legs. The leg was like this nasty piece of half-burnt firewood. And that's like the ceremonial chair. So that's his style, you know. He just had a style, like everyone has a style. Zen teachers are not free of style. And the monk was not impressed by this style. it appears. Because he said, "For a long time I've heard of the stone bridge of Jiaozhou, but now that I come here, I just see a simple log bridge." So now that makes more sense, huh? "I've heard that there was an impressive stone bridge here, and I just see a really simple log bridge. I'm not impressed." And this is interesting. These stories are interesting, too, because China is like the birthplace of manners, you know. They had very elaborate customs around manners and a very clear system around keeping one's station and honoring your elders, and the whole Confucian ideal imbues everything. And so it's really scandalous that this new monk would insult the teacher and say, "I've always heard that there was an impressive teacher here, but you're not too impressive, you know." So I really relate to that story, because I'm not too impressive. Someday somebody's going to walk in the door and say, "I've heard of the great bridge of red cedar." "I come here, I've heard of the great tree," or I guess, "I've heard of the great tree of red cedar, and I come here and I see only a dandelion." We'll all bow and say, "Yes, you only see the dandelion." And so that's interesting. He didn't correct the monk exactly. He was not defensive. You know, I'm sure he could have come up with many stinging, brilliant Zen riposts, right? To straighten him out. But he didn't straighten him out. He made an observation. Maybe even Jiaozhou was curious about this. Maybe he was able to bring to that moment some curiosity, like we were thinking about during Zazen. Some curiosity about what is this moment? Like, oh. So he said to him a statement, you know. "You just see the log bridge, you don't see the stone bridge." And the way it's written, translated in English, there's a period, you know, not a question mark, not an exclamation mark, just like, oh, how interesting. "You just see the log bridge, you don't see the stone bridge." And it really sounds in the story like this really turned the monk's mind around a little bit, you know. He suddenly, from being a little disappointed or indignant or whatever you want to assume, he turns around a little bit and he asks a question. And here it's written with a question mark. And an aside is, even that is interpretive because there's no punctuation in Chinese. So the translator had to make some interpretations here. But I'm sure that from the context it was clear that it was a question. The monk said, "What is the stone bridge? What is the stone bridge?" And Jiaozhou said, "It lets donkeys cross. It lets horses cross." What does that mean to you? It sounds like the stone bridge, or the log bridge, sorry, the log bridge is strong enough. Horse is pretty heavy. So there's a lot of ways we can look at this. And this is only useful, I mean, it's fun, you know, it's interesting. And these are neat old stories. Nice to have some more stories. And there's like materialism there too, right? We want to sort of own more stories and know about good stuff. But it's only useful if we can see how does this play out in our life. Are we the monk sometimes showing up somewhere expecting something and not too happy, not too impressed? Are we the teacher, trying our best to just be who we are? Maybe today we feel like a log bridge, maybe another day we feel like a stone bridge. And the world keeps showing up and expressing its opinion about us. We don't like that, maybe. So there's kind of a they point of view to this story. A sort of self and other point of view, which seems to be being acted out as if the monk and Jiaozhou were separate people in the story, which is how we read it first, right? Maybe we think that these people in my life, they don't see me as a stone bridge. They don't see my inner quality. They're disparaging of me, and that really hurts, right? It's a great sort of wound to that. So part of studying these stories is actually to feel into our own woundedness. It's right there, right? for any of us to come to bring to mind very quickly an example of this, I'm sure, where somebody showed up in our life and hurt us in this way, or we felt hurt by them. I don't know if they can hurt the stone bridge. We think they can. Or maybe it's the other way for us sometimes in this sort of self and other domain. They're so demanding. They think I'm supposed to be a stone bridge all the darn time, you know? What's wrong with a log bridge? I'm good enough. And so there's a sort of holding things in different positions here, right? That idea of something is better than something else. And then we start to realize, well, that's another level to the story. Does it make any sense whatsoever to think that there are stone bridges and long bridges? Or is that something extra that we bring to life? Does it help us? Does it cause suffering? And then we can look at it from our point of view. Why can't they be better? You know? Why can't they be stone bridges for me? Couldn't she see what I needed? Or institutions. I think we're really good at this with institutions, especially it's like the American pastime to judge our institutions as faulty. They should all be stone bridges, and they're not. Even President Obama turns out not to be a stone bridge. It's really disheartening. Although today he made, or yesterday, I guess, did you see this in the news? He made a public statement.
Today.
So this was zooming around the internet today. Today he made a public statement in support of same-sex marriage, which he'd never said before. And he's the first sitting president, you know, ever to say those words. So there's a bridge to somewhere. So many layers of the story, right? Like we're jealous of people. We think they're stone bridges. We're only log bridges. Maybe we're mad at them, or maybe we think that they have something to teach us. I see you're a stone bridge. Would you be my teacher? Or maybe we're activated in some way by someone else thinking we're a stone bridge. Ah, yes, you're right. I am a stone bridge. Would you like me to share with you my stone, my stoniness? And then of course this is happening internally. We don't need somebody else to walk into the room for all this stuff to play out. You might feel like I need to be a stone bridge, and I'm not. Or maybe part of me is a stone bridge, at least. I'm good at blank, fill in the blank. Maybe we feel partially stone. Or maybe we feel like I need to learn how to accept that I'm only a log bridge. If I could just accept that, I'd be happy. Or maybe sometimes we feel like, well, I am a stone bridge, but I better act like a log bridge so I don't overwhelm people. Or maybe we feel like inside I'm really just a log bridge, and I always will be, but I can do my best to convince them that I'm a stone bridge and I'll get by in life. And maybe this even plays out, you know, moment by moment by moment. One moment, a stone bridge. Another minute, a log bridge. You know, and maybe the koan is asking us, is it possible to appreciate? Here's a log bridge. It's just a log bridge. It's not a failure, it's not a success. Here's the stone bridge. I can cross. And maybe as we study this, and meditation here is so helpful, right? Peeling back some of these layers, sitting, you know, in this moment, feeling what's arising. Maybe sometimes we will notice or experience or touch into a sense of the log bridge and the stone bridge not being so separate. Maybe there is no stone bridge. Maybe there is no log bridge. After I gave this talk in Worcester, we had a little discussion, and one of the students, I guess, was feeling discouraged. I talked to his teacher about it later, and he says to me, well, what about when the log bridge and the stone bridge fail? And I said to him, somehow you still stay up. Which maybe you seem to appreciate that. Because is there really a river that we need to get across? Is there really anything that we need to figure out or do? Do we need to solve the riddle of the stone bridge and the log bridge in our life? Maybe. And how can we practice with this? And like I was saying, that's, I think, really where this gets interesting, when we're triggered, right? You know, when we're caught in some way in our life. Is, you know, just to bring this up as a possibility, you know. Once in a while, if we're lucky, some other possibility besides just, you know, comes into the mind, and we say, oh, I really want her to be a stone bridge for me. I'm not feeling my own feet on the bridge here. And that could really change, you know, the dynamic, change the feeling. And so anyway, Jiaozhou was famous for these kind of just very simple spoken responses that just evoke so much. You know, in a way, in this story, the student really set him up for it, but he was right there, you know, ready. And so I want to make the claim that in Worcester I did a much better job keeping to the 10 or 15 minutes. Here I just like spread out, so I used up all the time and all the oxygen. But in the minute or so that remains, what's your sense of this story? Does this seem helpful or interesting to you? Yes? Are you a good student?
I can't believe you brought this up last night. Crazy Mike's video story, right? This guy comes up to me and says, weren't you a counselor? And I sort of recognized him from years back. I said, And he said, are you still counseling? I said, yeah. And he said, well, that's too bad.
He didn't say anything, he just looked.
No, he just looked at me like in compassion or sympathy, you know, like, that was a mean thing to do, and what else could you do? And so I'm driving home, and I'm thinking of all the things I could have said, like, hey, I'm just a counselor, not a neurosurgeon. And then I thought, what are you doing? You're letting him get in your, you know, it was a very difficult case that didn't work for him. And he's, you know, that's okay. I couldn't be a stone bridge or a log bridge for him. And I was feeling suddenly very unstable, you know, about, am I a good counselor? You know, and then I thought, wow, look at that. How easily one can be shaken.
Yes.
Yeah. So I love that. I mean, to be okay being a log bridge, even maybe a log bridge that somebody doesn't like, and I don't have to change it.
Yeah.
He can go find another bridge. and I don't have to hate him either and say mean things to him, like, you really need a neurosurgeon.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's great. That's the perfect sort of capping story to our story, and that's how they do this. They, in order to explain these stories, they just add more stories. So here we have Nancy's Crazy Mike's.